Good morning, John. Tell us a little bit about yourself at the Alaska Volcano Observatory. Maybe just some of your credentials, and introduce yourself.
Sure, Vic. I'm John Power. I'm a geophysicist at the Alaska Volcano Observatory here in Anchorage. I've been with the AVO for many, many years. Yes, I started with them in 1988, and have had the good fortune to work at many of the volcanoes up and down the Aleutian Chain, including some time at Makuchin, local there to you all, some time at Akutan, and elsewhere throughout the chain.
All right, excellent. Well, as you know, we are experiencing some in my limited time here in Alaska, some very unusual earthquake. Can we call them swarms?
Yeah, no. What we're seeing, Vic, as you all know, is we're having a very significant earthquake sequence that's taking place right now, centered on the east side of Makuchin volcano, which is not, of course, at all far from you all in Alaska, which is why you're feeling them pretty strongly, as you've reported to us, Vic. The way the sequence has played out so far is yesterday things started off with the biggest event. Our biggest earthquake, which happened at 2:16 p.m., that was a magnitude 4.5. This was followed very closely at 3:34 by a 4.1, and then we had a 3.9 about 5:38 p.m. In addition to those very large or fairly large earthquakes, large for a volcanic setting like Makuchin, there have been literally, you know, several thousand, you know, very small earthquakes in the magnitude half and lower range. The sequence has continued through the night. The most recent activity that was larger, we had a magnitude 3.3 at 7:36 this morning, and then followed by a 2.6 at 8:32 a.m. So where we are is we've got this ongoing sequence of earthquake activity there at Makuchin. In response to this, the Alaska Volcano Observatory has raised the what we call the color code warning system to yellow for Makuchin volcano, and this is the lowest level of warning that simply notes we have unusual activity that's occurring. The earthquakes that we are seeing here at Makuchin are very unusual for Makuchin volcano. We started monitoring Makuchin back in 1996 with a seismic network, and we have not seen an earthquake sequence of this size occur at the volcano in that 24-year period. So, as you can imagine, Vic, when something like this gets started, those of us at the Alaska Volcano Observatory sort of shift into full gear. We're continuing to monitor the earthquake activity very, very closely. We have folks checking the earthquake's ongoing activity right now on an hourly basis overnight. We do this in partnership with both the National Earthquake Information Center in Golden, Colorado. We also work very closely with the Alaska Earthquake Center at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. And that's kind of the developing situation. We, of course, monitor Makuchin with a whole number of instruments. We have, in addition to seismometers, some webcams, some continuous GPS receivers. We also use a large amount of satellite imagery to check what's going on at the volcano. And what we've done at AVO this morning, or actually beginning yesterday about 2:16 p.m., is we're calling in all those resources to try and monitor the ongoing situation at Makuchin. It is a situation of a fair amount of concern for us, although I will emphasize that there is nothing at this point that tells us that Makuchin will move to some kind of volcanic eruption. Oftentimes you have earthquake swarms like this which turn on and then eventually slowly die out with no following eruptive activity. So I hope that at least gives you a brief introduction, Vic, to what's going on at Makuchin today.
Okay, well,
maybe too much information for you.
No. I just wanted to mention that that you have co-authored a very important article in the Journal of Volcanology and Geothermal Research. It's called Seismic Tomography of Compressional Wave Velocity and Attenuation Structure for Makushan Volcano, Alaska. So in your article, John, you mentioned that there is, due to research with attenuating seismic waves, you have identified a magma chamber, is that correct? A magma body east of the volcano itself?
No, that's right, Vic. The scientific study you're talking about is one that we just published earlier this year in the Journal of Volcanology and Geothermal Research. This was a large research project for us that was done in cooperation with the University of Wisconsin and Madison, researchers at the Los Alamos National Labs, and the University of California, Riverside. This was we spent a lot of time in the community of Unalaska putting out additional seismometers on the volcano that were deployed for a short period of time, back in 2015, 2016. This is basically the results from that study. We probably met a lot of folks in Unalaska when we were there working, and what we did see was there is this low, what we would describe as a low velocity zone. The results that we have here are very much like you would see in a CAT scan, of a medical CAT scan, only this one happens to show the structure beneath the volcano, and we do see this low velocity zone, a place where seismic waves propagate more slowly through the Earth under the east side of the volcano, and this lines up very, very nicely with the known geothermal field that's there and is likely the in some way involved in as the source of many of these earthquakes that we're seeing here over the last day.
Okay, yeah, I think the 7:36 event that happened this morning seemed to be centered right in the middle of that earthquake swarm. I don't know if that's what it ended up being, because sometimes the first identification of the epicenter isn't as exact as it turns out
as
to
it
be.
It could be.
Yeah, as
right.
It could
no,
be.
No, I'll give you a little background here, Vic, is what happens when an earthquake occurs, and the way to think about this is the seismic waves are propagating out through the Earth. It's much like when you throw a rock into a pond, and the things you feel are those waves going by within the Earth. Typically, when we locate those, the first location and magnitude is somewhat preliminary, and then it gets refined. The data from our sensors comes back to us in real time through a system of dedicated internet connections. The computer immediately locates it, comes up with a magnitude. Then we have someone, typically a person, will go in and review what the computer's done and try and refine both the location and the magnitude a bit. So those. The information that we release does get updated with time, and so that's why sometimes there are different magnitudes and slightly different locations that are reported, but they usually get improved as time goes by, and we have time to review all the pertinent data from
the
variety.
The first there can be several solutions, right? That come in. Sometimes we see, like the last one that we just had, which was it came in at 3.1 as the first preliminary magnitude, but they said the depth was zero, which always gives me a pause.
Right. No, and that is because you're looking at one of those very rapidly generated automatic, what we call an automatic solution, and then as we have time, someone will actually sit down and look at the data and analyze it in more detail. And unfortunately, people are still better at locating earthquakes than computers are.
Wow.
I can believe that, but it's true. Some of our automated processing is not as good as when we actually have someone review the data ourselves.
Yeah.
That happens.
when the first one came in, it showed it close to what we call McLeese Lake out near Reese Bay. And then it became more refined and almost seemingly in the Makushan Valley. But what interests me is that the Alaska Volcano Observatory published two of the earthquakes in kind of different places, and is that due to the refinement, or because the USGS map differed from the Alaska Volcano Observatory map, who's more accurate?
It all depends, Vic. And what you're seeing here is the way that this works is, you know, the automatic solutions will go out when there's a very large earthquake like this, a large earthquake like this. The information will flow not only to the Alaska Volcano Observatory, but also to the Alaska Earthquake Center in Fairbanks, as well as the National Earthquake Information Center in Golden, Colorado.
Okay.
And when big earthquakes occur that are felt and are, you know, considered to possibly be damaging to communities, the information is released very quickly so that if there is a need for an emergency type of response, that information gets to individuals such as, you know, the National Guard, FEMA, the Alaska, you know, Homeland Security, those folks. And the solutions are then improved over time, and that's why those initial locations that you saw that came out, you know, put them up, you know, further to the north, and why the magnitudes were further refined. Probably, you know, determining magnitudes is like any science. There is a little bit of interpretation that goes on. Probably the magnitudes that the National Earthquake Information Center in Golden, Colorado put out are eventually the preferred magnitudes, and that's because they are using data from more sophisticated sensors that oddly are at great distance from an Alaska and Makushan volcano. And the more sensitive sensors, you know, there are some in Kodiak, some in Adak, throughout, you know, Washington, Oregon, California, Canada, for an event this big, they'll use that information, which is a little bit more refined than what we have for our real-time processing here in Alaska.
Okay.
That's the way it works, and that's why some of the solutions initially, when you're looking at them very quickly after they are reported, as you are, will change a little bit with time.
All right.
If you move into the research realm, then, you know, then they will begin to eventually, you know, months down the road, be pinpointed very, very accurately, or at least as accurately as we possibly can.
All right. Yeah, because I don't know. I've got just some things that are coming from the USGS, and then Berkeley, California, has an interesting real-time website that seems to be kind of correlating with some of what the USGS has been saying. But John, here in Unalaska, these are really, to me, they're very unusual earthquakes in that they're so close that the P and the S wave, which the P wave, you can explain to us, is a compressional wave, and the S wave is kind of the one that goes side to side. But when we have these earthquakes, they're so close and so shallow, they just is like it's kind of like a car hitting the side of a building.
Right. No, what you're talking about, Vic, and the way that I describe this to folks is I usually say that there are several different types of waves that are generated in an earthquake, and the P wave or the primary wave is the one that moves the fastest, and the secondary wave has a slightly different motion, a bit more side to side. It comes a little bit slower. Now, these earthquakes are shallow enough and close enough to you all that it would be very difficult to pick those out yourself when you're feeling the earthquake occur, although, you know, you guys are close enough to the epicenters of these that kind of, it would be more like you described. You're probably feeling them all kind of arrive at the same time because you are so close to these earthquakes, and the earthquakes are very shallow. If the earthquakes were more distant, you would have better luck with this.
Yeah. We experience earthquakes that are more centered toward the Benioff zone or the subduction zone that are a couple, maybe 100 miles away, and you can feel the first wave, P wave, and then the little bit of side-to-side motion with the S wave and other waves that come in. Yeah, so these are really these are really interesting earthquakes for us. In that,
absolutely,
they're just and frankly, they're kind of frightening.
Yeah, well, no, I can imagine that you know you begin to feel quite a few earthquakes as you all have. It can be quite unsettling. So far, we and most of our information has come from several folks, such as yourself, Vic, who we've been in touch with. We're not aware of any damage to any buildings or any damage that there is in Alaska, and hopefully that continues. I will point out some resources for folks if you're interested. At the Alaska Volcano Observatory, we have a web page where you can actually view the readouts from our seismometers. That's at www.avo.alaska.edu. When you come up on that first page, there's a section there on all the volcanoes that are at elevated alert levels right now. Makushin's the top one. If you click on that, you can look at the readout from one of our stations on the volcano. If you are feeling earthquakes, the USGS, in Golden, Colorado, at the National Earthquake Information Center, maintains a web page there called "Did You Feel It?" and you can report exactly what you felt there, and they're very, very encouraging of people reporting their experiences. That is actually helpful to them. They appreciate information that people send in. If you feel any others, I'd encourage everyone who's listening to participate in that process. It's actually kind of fun when you feel an earthquake to be part of it. They do post there's a nice map that shows where, you know, which areas have felt the earthquake more strongly and the sensations that folks have felt.
Yeah, I did fill out one of those. The first one that occurred, I did fill it out, and it is kind of it goes through a series of asking you questions that kind of leads to strong if the earthquake was stronger or less strong, all kinds of different questions, and it doesn't take very long to do, frankly.
Yeah, and then there's also the Alaska Earthquake Center's webpage at the University of Alaska, and so hopefully all those resources are available on the web. The AVO is also we're also on Facebook, and so I'd encourage people to find us there. We try and get information out to folks in all those ways about what's happening at the volcano.
Right. Well, if you're just tuning in, I have Dr. John Power with the Alaska Volcano Observatory, and John is a geophysicist who has expertise in seismology, which is exactly right up our alley here in Alaska as far as the earthquake swarm is concerned. A couple of questions have come in, John, that says, are there other ways to identify possible volcanic activity, kind of to maybe refine whether or not this is a magmatic tectonic event or magmatic event or just a tectonic event?
Sure, no, and this is an excellent question.
Oh, and let's, if you wouldn't mind, maybe define the difference between magmatic and tectonic.
Oh, sure, not a problem. No, and like I said, this is an absolutely excellent question. The way that we refer to it is, you know, the standard kind of earthquakes that happen on faults, you know, throughout Alaska, British Columbia, California, that are caused by the motions of the large-scale motions of the plates, you know, things like the 1964 earthquake in Alaska, you know, large earthquakes on the San Andreas Fault. These are ones folks might be familiar with. We refer to those as tectonic earthquakes because of plate tectonics. And then we have magmatic source things, and these are earthquakes that are driven by the volcanic processes within volcanoes. And so now the two, of course, there can be interactions between those two sources, so it's not always, unfortunately, completely black and white. What we currently suspect for these sequence of earthquakes, because of where they're located and their proximity to Makuchin volcano, is that these are probably driven by some kind of magmatic source. What we're going to watch for now as we progress forward is there, you know, if this were to lead to some type of eruptive activity, and there's no indication at this point that that's going to happen, but what we will do is we will watch for first changes in the locations of the earthquakes. Right now they're centered, you know, under Makuchin Valley. If they move closer to the summit of Makuchin, if they move from, you know, deeper depths in the mid, you know, down several kilometers, if they begin to shallow, we'll watch for that. Typically, when volcanoes move closer to an eruption, we'll begin to see other indications. We'll begin to see the ground actually swelling around the volcano. Frequently, there will be increased steam emission from the summit or the geothermal areas. We would begin to see increased gas coming out of the volcano, sulfur dioxide, hydrogen sulfide. You know, frequently prior to volcanic eruptions, people will report smelling, those kinds of things. So far, of course, none of that's happened at Makuchin, and we're simply looking at an earthquake swarm that is at some depth, and it could lead to some type of eruptive activity at Makuchin, and it also just as likely could at this point simply die away. And you know, we see both scenarios at volcanoes up and down the chain. Akitan in 1996 is an excellent example of a place where there were very, very many earthquakes, actually even larger than these, that occurred. The folks who live in Akitan were very startled by the activity that went on there. They were a sequence of magnitude fives. The volcano there never, following those earthquakes, never led to an eruption. It simply died out. I think it's anybody's best guess as to where this activity might go. What I can say is that, you know, we're going to keep as close a track of this as we can at the Alaska Volcano Observatory over the coming, certainly days to weeks, if not months. We'll be watching this just as closely as we can.
Okay.
I hope that answers this person's question.
Yeah, you absolutely answered that person's question. And also, John, what did you and the Alaska Volcano Observatory do during the 1996 event? Did you come out to the island? I know the answer, but go ahead and tell us.
Sure. No, well, it is something to think about. If you think about the long term, you know, when you're monitoring volcanoes and watching volcanic systems, these things become active over, you know, there are long periods of activity. You know, we think about them in geologic time, although the volcanoes in the Aleutians are, you know, very active. What happened in 1996 at Akitan, for those who remember, or perhaps weren't around at that time, there was a very strong earthquake sequence under most of the island of Akitan that was related to magmatic activity. 1996 was, you know, some time ago, and our ability to watch the volcanoes in the Aleutians was much less than it is today. We had, in 1996, there were no seismometers, no monitoring equipment on any of the volcanoes west of, oh, somewhere around the Mount Katmai region. So we were very, our ability to look and diagnose the activity was much less than it is today. What the Alaska Volcano Observatory has now is a very extensive monitoring system. We have seismic networks on 32 of the volcanoes up and down the chain. You know, when Bogoslav was erupting, even though we didn't have instruments on that volcano, we used the data from Akmak volcano on Umnak, the instruments that were on Makuchin, and the instruments that are on Akitan to keep track of what Bogoslav was doing. We did send people out to Akitan in 1996 right away because, you know, to deploy temporary instruments to try and, you know, keep track of that activity. Such a response now, because we already have the instruments in the ground on Makuchin, is is not necessary at this point in time. We're getting all this information in real time, and I, again, would encourage folks, one of the most popular things we have on our website is the ability to look at the ongoing seismograms from the volcano, and we call these webacorders. It's all right there on the web, and you all, if you feel an earthquake, can hit our webpage and look at the seismic recordings from up on the mountain. And I'd encourage folks to do that if that's of interest to you all.
Yeah, I've been keeping track of that pretty closely in the past 24 hours anyway, or somewhere in the...
Sure.
Yeah. Let's see, John, I have to say, many people are wondering about additional tests that the Alaska Volcano Observatory could maybe do. And so I guess I'm going to ask, is there any plans for you guys to come out and take a look at maybe SO2, H2S levels or CO2 levels, see if they're increasing or...
Right now, Vic, and the situation, of course, is rapidly developing for us as well. Right now, I don't know if we haven't put any plans together to have people actually travel to Unalaska to make additional measurements. There are a number of things we could do, and certainly we will be considering them in the coming hours to days, depending on how the earthquake activity plays out. One of the most important things that we would do would be actually put some instruments to measure for increased gas, hydrogen sulfide, sulfur dioxide coming out of the volcano, and actually fly around the summit of the volcano and try and measure those. We have some very, very sophisticated and very accurate instruments. A couple of things will go into that decision. Is it necessary? Do we expect that? We can measure those gases as well, although with much less accuracy from satellite. We're certainly already looking with satellite for any of that kind of data. So far, that's come back negative. But those are the kinds of things that we will consider in the coming days if it's necessary. Of course, we're like everybody else at this point, Vic. We're working very hard to minimize travel and maintain appropriate social distancing, and we're trying to cut back on having people actually move around the state because of the concerns of
COVID.
That go with the of COVID. And so, but certainly if it becomes necessary, we would have some folks travel out to Unalaska and try and make on the ground or in the air measurements at the volcano. But so far, I don't think we have reason to do that just yet.
Okay, I guess the loaded question would be, what's the tipping point?
Oh, sure. The way I try and describe this to people is I always liken it at this stage of any kind of volcanic unrest. It's like when you go to the doctor. You're having some chest pains. You go to the doctor. You say, "Boy, doc, I'm having some chest pains." And the doctor says, "Well, okay, let's look at everything." And they start thinking about, what your family history is, what your cholesterol levels are. They think about, are you under any kind of stress? Have you been doing unusual activities? And then they'll say, okay, well, based on that, we'll do this test, or we think, and there are a whole variety of ways to look at that. And that's the way this will play out as well, is we'll look at what's happening here. We'll continue to monitor the data that we have, and then we'll make some decisions as we move forward. It's hard to say if there's actually a tipping point, or when we would decide that was necessary. We will be looking as best we can with satellite data. I think it is still cloudy in our webcam this morning.
Yes, quite cloudy here.
When I last looked, it was very dark. But we'll be working hard on seeing if there's any changes at the summit in the webcam. Certainly, if anyone in Unalaska, if you guys notice anything, if it clears off and you can see the summit, you notice increased steaming, you can contact us through our webpage. We're happy to get reports from you all. If you notice anything unusual or that doesn't seem right, that is helpful to us. We've got very good relationships with folks flying, up and down the chain who, once we put out a notification like this, we get a lot of helpful information from airline pilots. If the summit of the volcano is sticking out, they're very good at sending us photographs. We get a lot of very, very helpful information, through these channels as well.
Okay. Now, if you're just joining us, I have Dr. John Power from the Alaska Volcano Observatory, and John is discussing and telling us about the seismic swarm or the earthquake that you've been feeling in the last 24 hours now. Thank you very much, John, for calling in. I do have a question about the first earthquake. Did the Alaska Volcano Observatory notice any lead up to that 4.5?
Vic, that's again a very interesting question. No, the magnitude 4.5, we did not have any. There was nothing special going on at Makushin that our normal everyday analysis had called attention to. The way things work at AVO and our normal monitoring process, we have seismometers up and down the chain every day. 365 days a year, we will have someone who goes through all the seismic data from each of the volcanoes twice a day and makes periodic checks to see that, to look at each of the volcanoes throughout the chain. And there was nothing special about Makushin that we picked up yesterday or in the past few days, although we certainly will be doing, additional analysis now that we've had this activity start, trying to pinpoint the earliest indication that something might have pointed to this. It is not completely unusual to have volcanoes, start up this way with...
So no precursors.
Right, and you might, yeah. So, but we are also looking at, and this is the other thing that we're involved in now is looking at other analogous situations from past volcanoes that have become active around the world, really, trying to find, the closest analogy we can to the activity that we're seeing now at Makushin to try and figure out if there's some patterns there that might emerge from this.
Okay. There was a couple people just climbed Makushin last week, and I'm pretty sure they took some pretty detailed pictures. I'll have to get a hold of them, and maybe they can submit some pictures to you guys. It was clear last week, and it was a really good time for climbing the volcano.
Sure, no. We really appreciate people who are willing to share photos with us. So that would be wonderful.
Great. All right. Anything else you want to add, John, that I haven't covered that you feel like maybe we need to discuss?
No, I would just call attention again if folks have interest. Our webpage, we try and keep it as updated as we possibly can, and I'd encourage folks to visit on the web or Facebook and keep track of the activity. If there are other, you can contact us through our web, through our webpage, if there are any specific questions that you have, and certainly if you feel earthquakes, the USGS Did You Feel It earthquake page is we really appreciate that kind of input as well.
Okay, I do have another question that came in, and somebody was asking: is there a relationship between Makushin's activity with Cleveland or even others in the region?
Also a very good question. There, as far as we can tell, there is no. There certainly is a big picture. All of these volcanoes up and down the chain: Akutan, Akmak, Cleveland, are all a result of, you know, the larger plate tectonics and the subduction zone that we all live along. There is no specific relationship that we can see between the different volcanic centers.
So each magma chamber is is independent of the other ones.
That's our best understanding currently. Now that could change, you know, 100 or 1,000 years from now as we get more information. But right now we think of them as independent systems.
Okay, all right. So in the coming days, you'll be monitoring this and posting information on the Alaska Volcano Observatory website. And, of course, we will, here at KUCB, we have this recorded, and we will post it up on KUCB's website. If people have questions, can they submit them to the Alaska Volcano Observatory or anything like that?
Yes. No, absolutely. We have, you know, we frequently get folks asking questions through our website, and, you know, we're happy to try and get information out to folks. We do understand that when you're feeling earthquakes like this, it can be quite unsettling, and we're happy to help folks just as much as we possibly can. So, you know, certainly let us know, and if there's more information that we have, we do try and update our website just as rapidly as we can, or as soon as more information is available. So certainly, hopefully all those ways are effective in getting information out to you all.
Okay. I do have one more question.
No worries, Vic.
I think we kind of discussed this already a little bit, but first of all, these are fairly shallow earthquakes, and are they seemingly corresponding to that magma area that you have identified? Is it close, or are they several miles apart? What are you seeing?
And this is something we're going to be looking at very carefully over the next few days. We've already been in touch with the folks who were involved in that research. They're working very hard on it. This is one of the very exciting things that happens at the observatory and really within the volcano monitoring community. There are a lot of folks who are very focused on what's happening at Makushin. It's not just us here at AVO. We've got folks in Colorado, Wisconsin, Washington, D.C., the Carnegie Institute, who are all very dialed into this.
The paper that you published that just came out in 2020, which is the tomography paper in Elsevier's Press, that paper that you published, are the people who you co-authored with, are they aware of the swarms?
Oh, yes, absolutely. No, as soon as this got going yesterday, we're in touch with as you might imagine, there's a very extensive community, really an international community at this point, that when something like this begins that is of concern, volcanologists from around the globe really begin to dial in and try and offer helpful advice and work together to paint the, to come up with as clear an understanding as we can. Now, of course, the situation is rapidly developing. We've had less than 24 hours here, but no, the folks who have worked most recently and published at the University of Wisconsin and so on are, they were notified yesterday, kind of I think around 5 p.m. And of course, with the time difference, they were back with questions and insights very early this morning. So it's very gratifying to be able to pull upon resources like that to help us understand what's going on at this volcano. So no, we're very plugged in that way, and it's kind of a
So
it really helps us out a lot.
So you're still working on solutions as far as depth and correlation, and at some point you guys are going to be able to more accurately pinpoint where these swarms are coming from. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. No, and it will take some time, but no, that is very much the focus of a good number of folks, both here at the Alaska Volcano Observatory and then a number of other institutions around. And probably the results will get better and better and better as we move forward here and have more time to actually look at the information that we're getting. But what's important right now, or I think the most important thing, is we are seeing these earthquakes. They are under the volcano. At this point in time, there's no indication that an eruption is necessarily going to occur because of them, but it is a possibility that we're looking at, and we will continue to monitor the situation very closely, and we'll be updating our level of concern color codes as the situation, dictates in the future. It will be something interesting to watch over the next few days and weeks, just to see how this all plays out.
Great. All right, John. Well, thank you so much for calling in. We really appreciate your input and the Alaska Volcano Observatory's attention to our interesting phenomena of earthquake swarms out here in Alaska. And thank you again, John. This is Dr. John Power, and he works for the Alaska Volcano Observatory, and he is you're a geophysicist with an expertise in seismology, right, John?
No, that's right, Vic. And no, we appreciate the opportunity to talk to all you out there, and hopefully things will calm down for us here in the next 24 hours. So thanks very much, Vic. We do appreciate the opportunity to get on the air here.